You are listening to Know You're Crazy. My name is Susan Dene. We all have crazy. What separates us is how we choose to deal with it. I'm going to be delivering engaging and actionable tools to own your crazy, treat your crazy, and turn it into your own superpower. I hope that you walk away from this show feeling the power and strength within you. And never forget to enjoy your journey because you are worth it. Welcome to the Know You're Crazy talk show, where you are listening to emotional recovery in the raw. And I am excited about today's guest. If you are struggling, if day by day goes by and you are feeling the ick of life, if it feels like Groundhog Day every day, then today's guest is for you. Tanya Delane is our guest and my guest today. Tanya is a woman on a mission to help others who have lost their way through addiction and other forms of identity sabotage for them to recover and rise. Tanya is a sought-after empowerment coach and emotional fitness trainer, a certified yoga and meditation instructor, and the author of her debut book, It's Not About the Banana, the five-step method to stop living other people's lies and start living your truth. She sees you. She understands you because she is you. After discovering the power of the pause, she could restore her clarity, regain her voice, finally start speaking her truth, and best yet, realize her true purpose on this planet, helping others do the same. Her mantra, speak to heal. Through her internationally downloaded podcast, Soul Shack Sisters, Tanya has reached and coached thousands of women seeking clarity and purpose. In addition to her podcast, Tanya has created courses and workshops centered around identity sabotage, written and produced empowerment meditations, as heard on Insight Timer, and privately mentored women in her healing practice, empowering you to live life with passion and purpose. Well, welcome to the Know You're Crazy show, Tanya.
Yes.
I'm excited to have you.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thank you so much.
Yes, it's a journey with you and I. It is a journey. You and I have had the honor of knowing each other for several years, working with one another for probably, I don't know, are we over a year now? Maybe 2 years?
Yeah, going towards two. Yeah.
Yeah, so I know for me, it's been a pleasure to witness you in your growth. To witness you simply with the book, the debut of the book, the creativity. You are a woman who gets it done. You are inspiring with the amount of action that you put out there. So I am honored and pleased to have you here today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things, so I'm going to get right to the point, right out of the gate, because here's the $1 million question. What does it mean it's not about the banana? If you could just share with the audience you, your inspiration for the book, the story about It's Not About the Banana, and then we will just jump right in.
Yeah, that's a great way to start it out, because everyone's always like, well, if it's not about the banana, what is it about? And of course, I had to put a chapter in the book with the title of the book, It's Not About the Banana, because it really, honestly, it came to a moment in my life. I was in my early to mid 30s, having a fight with my now ex-husband over a banana. And up until that point, you know, I was living my life. I thought I was doing well. I felt like I was checking all the boxes with a good corporate job, and I owned my home and even had a side business and taking care of kids, doing the PTA thing, you know, just doing all of the things. I thought I had it together. And that moment when we were in the kitchen and he got all upset about his banana. It had gone missing. And little did I know it was his banana. I had cut it up and put it in my daughter's cereal. And she was like, I think in second grade. And he freaked out over a banana, just got so upset. And here I am now reacting to his acting. I'm responding emotionally, showing up, owning his drama. as mine. And I, at that moment, when he yelled back at me after I took off saying, I can't believe you're acting like this over a banana. And he yelled at me, it's not about the banana. At that moment, I realized, oh my gosh, it's not about the banana. And I had this huge spiritual awakening, the shift in perspective of the way that I was showing up in my life and how I was really just reacting to everybody else's acting, reacting to how everybody was showing up in my life as if that's how I had to respond. That's what I had to deal with. And I realized at that moment that so many of the things that we argue about and get upset about and overreact about, obsess about, it's never about that thing. It's always something deeper. And part of my practice when I went to school to get my bachelor's in Ayurvedic wellness, we always talk about getting to the root cause of the symptom. What is the root cause? And I thought, you know, this is no different. Emotions are just like anything else. And there's a deeper reason the way we're responding to things. So I just started to dissect it deeper and got to this like aha moment that, you know, we have been showing up as our false self, adopting other people's lies as our truth. And that's where the whole identity sabotage came from. And then the book, I threatened I was going to write this book for the past 10 years. But, you know, the universe had other plans for me. And I think it's because I still had more bananas to peel before I was ready to reveal the book.
Yeah, I think we all have a lot of bananas to peel. I was thinking to myself as you were sharing, one of the things that popped in my head was the power of influence. And we don't really know for sure. Sometimes we can kind of surround ourselves around people who we like to be influenced by. They might say something that we like, and so they have something that we want. But I believe that we often underestimate the influence that our family has on us.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to testing our crazy or testing me personally, if I make this just about my story, relationships under the roof, as much as they are the ones that I surround myself with, they are the ones that I choose to spend the majority of my time with. They are also the ones that are so intimately connected with us that they can say one line and it can stick with you for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And
it's like often if I reflect back on some situations in my life, I will think, that is the only person that could have said that to me that could have had that impact on me.
Right.
Right. To cause that awakening that you described, you know, someone that you're sharing the home with, someone that you're parenting your children with, someone that is so close to you.
Right. Because
that is a huge aha moment.
It really is. And I think too, it's in those moments that we are caught off guard. You know, we're in our safe space, we think. We're in a place where we can be vulnerable and open and don't have to wear all those emotional jackets like you talk about. And when it happens, you're just like, whoa, wait, the one person I trusted the most, the one person that I thought understood me the most is showing up like this. And it just catches you off guard. And then you start to question and wonder, okay, who am I? What am I showing up as for myself?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing that I loved when I was reading your book is you are a fantastic storyteller. I can feel your humor in the book. I love the spots of humor within the book. It's as if you're chatting right there, just telling the story. I was actually at the gym running on the elliptical and out loud laughed at something I read. I think I may have mentioned it to you. It was the Banana Gate or something.
Banana Gate
like
broke. Yeah, when the Banana Gate broke. Yeah.
Yeah, it was so good. So I love the humor in the book. But more importantly, the book will help many people because you give this 5-step method.
Right.
You give this 5-step method. And so I'd like to kind of go in that direction.
Yes.
I want to say that the beginning of the, well, I'm going to let you take over right now. You go. Cause I, you know, this is your stuff, you know.
I mean, well, you just read it. So you're fresh minded on that one. So the book is basically broken up into two parts. The first part covers the 5 steps. And that way it breaks it down easy for people to use and go back to and reference. And then part 2 is really just the recovery through discovery and sharing my stories of how I literally disconnected myself in some ways, literally, to reconnect and recover my truth, my true self. So the steps are as simple as I can be, because I like to keep things simple. Anything that gets overcomplicated, I just get overwhelmed and give up. And so I wanted to keep it as simple as possible. The five steps are, the first step is kind of like a pre-step. And that's the one that takes a little bit of time in the beginning to get going throughout the book, to really utilize it and see your unsafe beliefs, which is finding your preset, your baseline. And that's basically, you know, we all have a baseline. They all kind of run at different frequencies and vibrations. Like I think I say in the book, what rocks my boat may sink yours. Not everyone, you know, marches to the same beat of a drum. So it's understanding what makes you tick, what sets you off, what makes you feel comfortable or uncomfortable to the point that you run, divert, hide, avoid, suppress, or mask.
What
your
makes
emotions.
You crazy, right?
What makes you crazy?
What
exactly
makes you crazy?
Yeah, exactly. So being able to really kind of pause in those moments, and you know, for me in the morning is when I feel like I'm pretty safe. Like that's my baseline. You know, you just woke up. Okay, nobody from the external world hopefully has bothered you yet. And you're kind of at this place where you're feeling pretty good until life gets lifey and you have to interact with other humans. And that's when you're going to start to see your baseline shifting a little bit. And, you know, all emotions are good emotions. I can't stress that enough too. Like we need to have all of them, all of the flavors to really, you know, survive and thrive in life. But understanding what sets you off and makes you want to hide and mute yourself is really the premise behind the resetting your preset to be aware of it. And then the steps in that, once you know what those things are, you're able to identify the emotions your body is experiencing, the feelings, what am I experiencing in those moments, to start to relate those emotions, those sensations in your body to whatever external event just took place. And then I break down questions. So then you're, after you're pausing in those moments, and I literally yell, pause. Oh my gosh, pause. I'm not liking what I'm feeling. Something's off. I don't know what it is yet, but this doesn't make me feel good. Or maybe it makes me feel too good. I mean, there's that yin and yang. But I can pause in those moments. And then I start to peel, which is the next step. Peel back. What is it about this is making me feel this way? What am I feeling? You know, what is the situation that's going on? And then, you know, asking yourself, is it true? Is what I'm feeling, this situation and what I'm thinking, is it really true? And most times it's not. It's an unsafe belief that we've adopted as our truth somewhere long, long ago in our childhood, that we've adopted as real for us because it was very real back then. And we've just continued to relive that over and over again throughout our life. So it's the peel part. And that in that peeling, you're revealing truth. You're revealing, the banana is starting to reveal itself, that what is the root cause of this emotion? And then you can start to heal from it. Once you can actually see a lot of times just how outdated it is, the thought that emotion may have came, like for me in the story of the book, the girl coloring outside the lines, I was coloring a bat and I was told that I was doing it wrong and I wasn't taking pride in my work and how dare you. At that moment, I was scared to be me. I was scared to like dare to do what I wanted to do, express myself. I thought this was great because it was brilliant.
I'm so gonna jump in right now. And I'll tell you why, because I read the story about the bat.
Yeah.
And you know what made me chuckle about that was I have a story about coloring too. This is why this is such a great share.
Yeah.
Mine was about staying within the lines and making sure that I
followed
directions.
Yin and yang.
Precisely. Like I remember it was George the kangaroo, trash kangaroo, and it was kindergarten. I remember it. So when I read this story, I was like, oh my goodness, me too. I wonder how many people had a story about how they used to color. Because I remember looking at the kid who colored all over the paper. And thinking, oh, well, that's off, right? But I was the rule follower. I was the teacher's pet. You know, God forbid I color outside those lines. So I loved your reading in there about how it all made sense to just do it this way because it was easier. And I thought, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. I won the contest. I got my picture put up at the mall. So then I was validated for following instructions.
You're like, this is what happens.
And being perfectionism, right? So it's crazy. I like the way that you said, how far back does it go?
Mm-hmm.
How far back does it go? Because I believe that the introspection that is required for emotional growth can be the most challenging, because we have those layers of beliefs, and you touch on beliefs in your book. We have those layers of beliefs that it's like layers to the onion. We got layer upon layer. If it was Donkey in the Shrek movie, you know, Parfait's got layers.
Yes.
Beliefs have layers. And we might have knowledge of the first belief, but then it's really the core belief that is withholding us from our ultimate growth.
Right.
And I think that the challenge for a lot of individuals is they think it's so much easier, and I've been guilty of this also, to just live in what we don't know what's good, because we're so used to tolerating. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what you describe in detail, really in your fantastic storytelling, is your ability to spot it.
Right.
To spot the crazy, to spot where it needs to be peeled, to spot where it needs to be healed. And so I was going to ask you, you know, when you are in that, so some of them take us by surprise, like you said, you know, the husband makes a comment about the banana and suddenly there's a full-on war in the house. We're yelling, we're screaming, we're aware that the little ones are listening, we're feeling as bad moms because we're living, you know, we know they're aware and they don't know what to do with the banana. They had it in their cereal or whatever, you know. So there's like this whole thing going on, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And so some of the awakenings will come because of just sheer misery, like arguing and fighting. You know, I mean, I could tell you story after story, right?
Right.
And then there's the ones, I love this, where you wrote in there, do you set your intention to pay attention?
Right.
That was fantastic. How many of us set our intention to pay attention? So if you wouldn't mind talking about that and what you're elaborating on, I mean, really what that concept is all about, because it really is about a mindset, right?
Absolutely, it is. You know, the intention that we're setting for our day, I like to set an intention every single day with what my purpose is, what I'm intending to do. Not even so much with like, I'm going to get, you know, the dishes done and the laundry done. That's my intention to do housework, whatever it is. But a lot of times it's maybe about spotting spirit or being intentional with my speaking, speak to heal, you know, being mindful of the words I'm choosing to use. And so it can really be any of those things, whatever you're setting attention for the day. And then, you know, being mindful and paying attention to where your feet are, paying attention to your body and how it's feeling, what you're thinking, what are you actually doing? How are you showing up and responding in life throughout that day? And taking those spot checks throughout the day to pause, breathe, and ask yourself, what am I feeling? And then ask yourself, are my actions in alignment with my intentions? And therefore, if they're not, you simply reset right there. You don't have to be like, oh, I ruined my whole day. I got to start over. I'll start over tomorrow. It's just really being mindful of the intention we set and then making a conscious effort to pay attention to our thoughts and our feelings and our emotions every moment throughout the day when we can. So that's why I always say in the book, you know, do 3 alarms, because it gets you in that habit of pausing and paying attention to reset your preset.
Remembering to do it, right?
Right.
Because I think that's, you know, sometimes we just wait for the negative emotion to come. Mm-hmm. And then it's day after day of that, you know, the Groundhog Day effect, where we are constantly in a cycle of negative emotion and we're waiting for something to happen, but we just know we don't feel good. But what you're saying is, if you pay attention to that negative feeling and you realize that it doesn't feel good, that there's opportunity to take that even another layer and say, oh, I mean, it's real simple, isn't it? You either feel good or you don't feel good. But I think if we've been in a state of tolerating for a very long amount of time, we may not necessarily know what good is anymore.
Right.
We almost have to remember what good is and what joy is, what satisfaction feels like, what joy feels like, what fun feels like. I still remember a therapy session years ago where she's like, what are you for fun? I'm like, what? Fun? She's like, yeah, you need to play
That's
more.
An option. Yeah.
Oh, you mean outside of the kids and the job and I watch TV.
Yeah.
Isn't that fun? I like comedies.
I like comedies. That's what I do.
Yeah, exactly. So breaking it down and then taking it one step further and asking yourself, where is this coming from?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And having that dedication to that practice.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And again, being mindful with the body and not asking, how am I feeling? I find that when we ask how we're feeling, we're quick. I'm fine. I'm fine.
Yep.
Brush it off, stuff it. But asking, what am I feeling? Right. Just like getting ready to come on to your show. I wasn't feeling much of anything up until 5 minutes before it was time to get on your show. And my heart starts to race a little bit. My body's getting a little warm. I'm breathing from the upper, parts of my lungs. I'm not breathing my full breath. And right then and there, I was able to just pause, take 3 long cleansing breaths in and out and say, what am I feeling? And what about this feeling is making me feel this way? And it was that I was excited, not anxious. I was excited.
Yep.
And it was able to, reset for sure.
One of the things I did, I think it was after my first husband got out of treatment, and then we were in this couples group, and they had like sober couples, right? And they said the likelihood of making it a sober couple, the likelihood of them making it was like practically nothing. I mean, if you're both getting sober at the same time, good luck, right?
Good luck, right.
But we're going to meet in this group and we're going to try to make it happen, And I remember they had sent us home with a worksheet with faces of different emotions.
Right.
And we had that on the refrigerator for a long time because as early sober people, not used to one, being clear-headed, right? I mean, you share about your story in the book a little bit, but just being clear-headed, like having the fog lifted,
right?
In recovery, we have this saying where we go through this pink cloud moment and hang on to that pink cloud for as long as you can, because eventually you're going to realize if you've been drinking constantly, whether you're alcoholic or not, but if you've been numbing for a while with some alcohol, when that fog lifts and you realize, oh my goodness, I don't know how to feel for one. And when I do feel, I don't know which face is me.
Right.
And then I don't know how to deal with that feeling.
Right.
And we had to literally learn new words for feeling.
Yeah.
And even when I'm doing some of my own work, I will Google different emotional words so that I can connect.
Yes. Yes.
So I can understand.
It's so true. I think that was one of the big things to actually have that sheet over here on my clipboard, because I look at it often still, because there's so many feelings and emotions that I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. That's a feeling. One day I was so undecided with how I felt that I discovered that undecided is a feeling. I'm like, I can accept that. Awesome. I don't have to try to solve this problem. It's not a problem. Just undecided.
I've done the same thing. So let's move on a little bit. So tell me about identity sabotage versus self-sabotage.
That's my favorite topic. Identity sabotage versus self-sabotage. So I was in a processing group one day, and the topic came up that these people were doing really well in life. Things were going good. They had time under their belt in the recovery community. They were getting their life back together, family, friends, jobs, finances, everything was going well. And then they self-sabotaged. They decided to, whether it be, pick up and drink or use or quit the job or move, like whatever. They're like, I self-sabotage. I'm always self-sabotaging. And something just didn't sit right with me in my soul. I'm at this point in my spiritual journey where I'm very awakened to what's going on and how things work. And I was like, that's just not right. That's not right. There's no way that we are doing that to ourselves. Mm-hmm. We are not deliberately doing this to ourselves. And I realized at that moment that the fact of the matter is we don't know who we are. We do not know who we are. We don't know ourselves. We don't know how to express feelings, feel feelings. We don't know what emotions belong to what. We don't know sometimes what we like to do for fun. What's our favorite food, our favorite color? What do you do? We just don't know, because we've been so busy either running and gunning and trying to, survive that we haven't really thought that thought.
Yeah.
Until you get to a point where you're in your mid 40s and you're like, who am I? Where am I? And how did I get here? This is not
what I want to be when I grow up.
Right. I'm like, this is not my life. What am I doing? No. And I just, at that point, it just dawned on me. I was like, it's not self-sabotage, because if you knew yourself, you would know just how perfect you are, how amazing you are, and how capable you are. That you're incapable of sabotage, right? Like if you knew, you wouldn't sabotage yourself. That at that point, I realized it was identity sabotage, and our identity has been sabotaged by the ego at a very, very young age. And they don't talk about this in school. So we didn't know how to spot it when it was happening and how to, you know, refilter and rewire our brain. Luckily, we've come a long ways in the brain science department that we can start to pick up some tools. And that's what I apply in the book quite a bit too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's an awareness game. It is a, what I like to say on that topic is I agree. I don't believe in self-sabotage either. I believe that everything we do because we will feel better.
Right.
It may not seem like it.
No.
But at times, that is what we are doing. Even if I'm in a hospital and I'm feeling sick, I'm at the hospital to feel better. If I, you know, choose to drink, even though it's misery for day after day, the point is when I choose to drink, I'm actually choosing because I want the pain to go away and I want to feel better.
Yes.
I got to go to work today at a 9 to 5 and I dread my job. I keep going to the job because I think it's going to make me feel better because I'm bringing home a paycheck. That's going to take care of the roof over my head. Right. So I don't think any of us are doing anything intentionally to sabotage and bring negativity into our existence. I think we make decisions and those decisions are met with intent to be good to us. And then ultimately we start learning the decision maybe wasn't the best.
Right.
But the motive was to always make us feel better.
Right.
And we're sifting and sorting constantly. And that's why you mentioned the 40s and we wake up and we're like, okay, so new decisions need to be made.
New decisions.
Like we don't know who we are.
Right. Exactly. And the words we're choosing to give our power to as well. I think that's another one, you know, as far as saying self-sabotage, that implies I'm self-sabotaging because why? I don't think I'm good enough. I'm not worthy. I'm not capable. Whatever the excuse that we give ourselves that makes us feel good in that moment to say it. And then we start to believe those things once again, that it's self-sabotage.
Yeah, it's a powerful concept. Well, for anybody who's just joining me, today's guest is Tanya Delane. We are talking about her debut book. It's Not About the Banana, a 5-step method to help you. What would you say? What do you say? Help you heal?
To basically stop living other people's lies and start living your truth.
Yes. Start living your truth. So if you are just now joining us, we are going to take a short break, but we will be back. Tanya, how could somebody get in touch with you? Where would they go? How could they purchase your book?
Oh, yes. Great question. They can go to my website. Everything is on there. It's the Soul, S-O-U-L, Shack, Sisters, with an S, .com. And it will have everything from the podcast to how to purchase the book to contact me for a free discovery call or recovery call, depending on what we're looking at, whether it's identity sabotage, recovering from that. But yes, soulshacksisters.com.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, we will be back shortly.
Boy, does this feel like good times today. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. I love it. This is a show that's going to invite all of you to open up your heart because it's about dreams coming true. There's a road we get to take as we craft out and we lay a course that's in service of so many others. Sometimes the universe, God, whatever you believe in, have you ever wondered why, but better than why, or how the universe knows how to line things up in a way that gets you ready for the most expansive part of who you're going to become? This is the time to change. And gratitude, leading with love, opens up more expansive possibilities than you can imagine. Crust busting your way to an awesome life.
I want to thank you all for tuning us in, turning us on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
it is time to get inspired to take action in your life. Tune in to Know You're Crazy. With me, Susan Danae. We are identifying, understanding, and treating our crazy one episode at a time. We all have crazy in our lives. The thing that sets us apart is how we deal with it. And I've got you covered. Enjoy your journey. You are worth it. Visit SusanDenae.com. That's DENEE.com.
Everyone, welcome back to the Know Your Crazy Talk Show. My name is Susan Danae, and you are listening to Emotional Recovery in the Raw. Today, my guest is Tanya Delane. She is the author of It's Not About the Banana, her debut book. It's an honor to have Tanya on the show today. We were at break. We were talking a little bit about the emotional rock bottoms that we meet. You know, the subtitle of this show is Emotional Recovery in the Raw. Because when we hit that emotional rock bottom, when we are absolutely floored and we feel like there's no hope or no way to get out, there's folks like Tanya, folks like me who have been there and done that and came out and been able to still live fruitful lives. And her book is a five-step method to show you how to do that. But as we were reminiscing a little bit, I asked Tanya if she wouldn't mind sharing a little bit of her story in case there's somebody out there listening to this today who's really suffering and feeling like, you know, you guys are sitting here talking, you're feeling all articulate, you're writing books, you're hosting podcasts, but man, you can't relate to me.
Right.
Just give us a minute.
Right. Hold that thought.
Hold that thought. So Tanya, go ahead. Share with us a little bit about what your story is.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to. I know when you asked me, I chuckled a little because I'm like, well, I put it all out there in my book. So I am all about being transparent and sharing all of my truth and my story. Because one thing I hung on to for the longest time, Susan, was I thought secrets kept me safe. And I'm sure you've told me that they keep me sick. And I've heard it so many times in the recovery community that secrets keep us sick. And I just didn't believe that. I really didn't. And it wasn't until I think my fifth relapse, my, you know, fifth or sixth time in the detox ward in the hospital, you know, four treatment centers, feeling to the point that I had hit rock bottom so bad that I literally thought it was going to be better off if I just took the entire bottle of sleeping pills and didn't wake up. I mean, I was committed to making that decision, but then, you know, the universe had other plans for me, obviously. But I found in this most recent relapse that the secrets keep us sick was so true. And in my recovery journey and, you know, trying to get out there and get back into, you know, working the steps as we do, working with your sponsor, going to meetings, doing all the things that we're told, not told, but, you know, suggested to do, there was something that wasn't clicking. And I would still end up back to that place where I thought it was a good idea to drink, just like they talk about. But it wasn't until that whole reflection of looking back on my life's decisions and how I kept repeating the same behavior over and over again, thinking that I was actually showing up differently. So it didn't make sense to me that it was those secrets that I kept within me that I thought kept me safe. And it was in admitting those secrets finally that I was able to truly connect and it to my higher power, to my, you know, to my spirituality, and then to other humans, that instead of what I thought would be shame, it was a lot of same here. Oh my gosh, me too. And, you know, and it's not like we find joy in somebody else's misery. It's the fact that we can find that relatability with other people and understanding that we're not bad people doing bad things. We're just sick. And it doesn't even have to be about alcohol. It could be anything. And so it's just being able to do that. And so in my, you know, my story, I never thought I was an alcoholic because I didn't start drinking until my late 30s. I had this vision, this, you know, unsafe belief, as you will, of what an alcoholic looked like. And my only experience of what an alcoholic looked like came from my side of the family on my mom's side. And it dawned on me not too long ago, I was witnessing untreated alcoholism. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, wait, there's actually a difference between treated and untreated. And so I kept on judging myself based off of the untreated version and those secrets. I felt, oh, I just got to keep them in. I got to keep them in. I can do this. I can recover. I can do this. And was just constantly that performance-driven person that was running and hiding and avoiding, even though I was fixing all the other things that I deemed worthy for you to see.
Yeah.
But the real root that was so far deep down in my soul that was making my soul sick, I never shared until that last relapse. And I was able to be like, yeah, no, this is me. And, you know.
Yeah. I was just, I was thinking the words performance-driven alcoholic.
Yep.
Man, that is so true. And I'm only going to speak to women because that's who I work with. But I know it's true for men too. But that performance-driven alcoholic, we are really good when we sober up, man. We can run companies. We can run circles. Like we can
write books.
We are a machine to be reckoned with. But man, when we're in our cups, the amount of shame that we will carry when the one thing that we can't wrap our arms around is to not put another drink in our body.
Yeah.
And when the drink hits the body, though, mm-hmm. that poor decision-making boy, all bets are off. Morals are out the window. Values, who has values? I need another drink.
What?
I
mean,
it is amazing the power of the obsession that takes that performance-driven individual and levels them to 4 treatment centers.
Yeah.
Levels them to a mental hospital.
Right.
All while being performance-driven. I mean, your book talks about these amazing things that you would do.
Right.
And I so understand. And how many awesome women out there right now might be dying in their cups, but still running companies.
Right. Yeah.
It's a thing. It's a thing. Just because you are alcoholic does not mean that you are not a talented, fantastic, ambitious woman.
Right.
Who is capable of top-notch performance, dreams to come true. One of the things that your book does a fantastic job about is inspiration. I can feel the hope in the pages. I can feel the faith in the pages. That is somebody who's been there, done that, and come back.
Right.
And the amount of inspiration and trust that you give the process by saying, if you just hang in there, like I can feel your heart through the pages when you're just encouraging them, just encouraging them. You can do this. You've got it within you. Your true self is just begging to come out. The expression, I love expression, like me too.
Right.
We hide behind our secrets. Secrets are shaming.
Mm-hmm.
Secrets are shaming. And when we learn to authentically live through it and to speak it and to be it, which is what your 5-step method does for individuals.
Absolutely.
It gives them a simple roadmap to start to uncover. And the very beginning of that is that baseline.
Right.
Where's the baseline? You know, if you're a hot mess and you're listening to this show, that's okay. That's okay, because hot mess has common ground too.
Oh, yes.
We're talking about the recovery rooms, right? Like when we hear our story.
Right.
We don't shame one another because we're all in the boat. I mean, if your ass is ending up in an AA meeting.
Yeah.
We're not worried about you being, you know, a high performer.
Right. Don't be showing off, trying to come all in cool, calm, and collected. Like, come on.
I want to be the top one in AA. You just got to ask yourself, well... There might be a marble missing. Okay. All right. So your 5-step method. So you've got your story and how you come through. One of the things that I found really fascinating also is this conversation about triggers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we also hear this in the recovery rooms because that word trigger, you know, what's going to trigger you to drink? Like that's kind of what you're not really talking about that. I guess we could take it all the way there if you'd like, but if you wouldn't mind expanding on the trigger concept.
Yes. Yeah. You know, and I had fun with that particular writing because we hear like, oh, the word trigger can be triggering. And so you'll be like, the trigger disclaimer, trigger warning, we're going to talk about triggers right now. Mm-hmm. And I respect that and love that. But at the same time, it goes back to the power of the word and the things and the words that we're choosing to give our power to. And what I had found in my extensive research in treatment facilities and detox hospitals and mental hospitals That was something that we are so quick to give our power to. Mm-hmm. It could be a person, a place, a thing, a smell, a sound, all of it. And we instantly go back to a past memory and we relive it in our head as if it's real and it's not. So the whole thing about you not being your triggers is just similar to you are also not your label, is that you may have something that moves your baseline, but you are not that thing. You can trigger someone, but you are not a trigger yourself. You are not a victim. You are not incapable of approaching these things with power and purpose to call them out for what they are and say, you know, no more, no longer. And I don't think I used that example in the book, but one of the triggers was a physical sound of a plastic cap opening.
Mm.
And I would relate that to opening my wine box, that sound. It was my wine box, which instantly took me to this like shame and guilt of who I was in that time when that sound was heard. And I had to face it and realize that's not who I am. I'm not my trigger. I am not this weak, vulnerable, susceptible, incapable, powerless person over a plastic cap, you know, like, come on. Or a person that raised their voice and made me feel uncomfortable because I was not used to men in my life. And I'm like, I'm going to let you make me cower down and be quiet? Seriously?
You know what's coming to my mind right now as you're telling that story? What's coming to my mind is I'm just a geek for this stuff, but the curiosity in which how we figure out how we operate.
Yeah.
The curiosity in that, like having that ability to be like, oh, that didn't sit right. One time I was at my old job and I walked in into the owner's office and he was this old Montana guy. Flannels, you know, just reminded me of home. I'm from Nebraska. So it reminded me of my dad.
Yeah.
And I can't remember, he was disappointed in me about something. And I rarely ever talked to him because I was trained in the day where you did not do owner, you followed chain of command.
Yeah.
It took me a while to realize that's not how they wanted things done, almost like 15 years. But anyway,
yeah,
got there. So yeah. I'm in his office and he's sitting behind his desk and he says something. I don't even remember what it was, but it was a trigger. And I walked out of his office and I got super upset. And I thought, oh my God, it's almost like I was talking to my dad just now. Like, yeah. I had this total realization that that person in that framework with that outfit on,
right,
was a man that I respected.
Yeah.
A man that his opinion meant a lot to me. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Threw me into this like emotional booby trap.
Right.
For a moment. Right.
Yeah.
For a moment. And,
right.
And I was so fortunate to be able to be aware of it.
Uh-huh.
But it still took me a while to shake it off.
Takes right? a minute. Yeah.
It takes a minute. Yeah.
It takes a minute. And I think that's too where we can even not be so timid to say it. Like, you know, I'm sorry, you just took me back a little bit. You remind me a little bit of my father with the flannel and the, you know, oh my gosh. And I was always wanting to, you know, impress my dad. And there's something about your presence that made me feel a little kiddish again, you know, and how that makes them feel comfortable too. Like we think it's all about us all the time, but, you know, forgetting that there's another person involved on the other side that has the same experiences. And what could you be bringing to that situation that makes him feel a certain way or think a certain way? And it's just that me-we relationship that we have with each other and being comfortable to speak your truth in those moments and be like, hey, you know. And I did with the wine cap thing. I said, this makes me remember this. And at that point, I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. And I started buying the coconut waters. I was juicing, making lots of juices with coconut water. And now when I hear that sound, I think of coconut water and juicing. So I was able to retrain and rewire my brain as well. And there was somebody similar to your dad's story that really intimidated me. And I was able to let them know that they did and why. And it was a respect thing, you know, because if I respect you and you intimidate me and make me feel like I'm 6 years old again. And we had a fun laugh about it. And at that point, that tension was broken and communication was had at that moment. And it was so different. It just shifted those simple little things.
They're simple little things. The memory that, or the thought that you spurred when you were sharing that was, I was thinking about what a fantastic job you do in, you know, it's not about the banana or it's not about these other things, and really connecting individuals in the book, you connect individuals to the idea that when you're, and I'll use my term real quick, when you're going crazy, like whatever that is,
yeah,
it's not about the incident.
No,
it wasn't about that. Like if you experience road rage, it's not about the road rage.
No,
it's not about the driver in front of you.
No,
it's about feeling behind the ball. It's about feeling tardy. Maybe you're tired that day, but there's other things going on that is not about that thing.
No.
And not only do you talk about, it's not about the banana, but you have several stories in there where you're describing this. And with every single story, you're given a nice description of what you had to do to peel and heal. Yeah.
Right.
And the practices involved with that. And that's one of the reasons why I love the book. It really is a great method for somebody to follow.
Yeah,
I also appreciate in the book the meditations at the end of the chapter. I was using a couple of those this week. I thought they were fantastic.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then I'm excited. Once I lose a couple pounds, I'm going to do your banana bread recipe.
Oh, that'd be so fun. Yes. 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 The banana bread.
How did you celebrate the book? Like you get this book, you're looking at it. I can't imagine how that must've felt for you, but how did you celebrate?
Oh gosh. You know, I don't think I have yet, to be honest. I went straight from finishing the book to, oh my gosh, now I got to promote the book too. Like there's all these things you have to do. I think just acknowledging it with my family and saying it out loud that I did it, because it was a huge transformational journey for me to finish the book. You know, I talked about writing the book forever, but I never really took massive action or any action at all. Like, forget the massive part. I didn't take any action. And that was part of the process in discovering why, getting to the root. Because I didn't think I was good enough to. I didn't think I was capable of being a writer, you know, and I share about that in the chapter. It's not about the book deal. I never saw myself as a writer. Therefore, it sounded cute to say out loud. It sounded impressive. I'm going to write a book, you know. And then when it came down to really looking at the truth and the lie, you know, the banana was exposed, right? The banana was revealed. And I had two choices, eat the banana or die, as I say in the book, because I feel like when you don't see your truth and lie and then choose to accept that truth, we're slowly dying inside spiritually, you know? Yeah. And so writing the book was its own celebration, Susan. It being able to finish it and see it ship and be in my house and in other people. I was celebrating with everybody that was like, I bought your book, and they're sending me photos. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. Like, that's how I celebrated. You know, I did buy a banana suit, and I've been dancing around in that to have a little fun.
Well, I think we had talked about. You bought a banana suit. I mean, that's the best one. Your TikTok videos, by the way, are fantastic. You do a fantastic job on TikTok. If you guys haven't checked her out on TikTok, what is your TikTok handle?
Yogi Tanya. Yeah.
Yogi Tanya. It is a fantastic TikTok channel.
Yeah, it's fun.
You are absolutely fun. That funness comes through. Is funness a word? I don't even know. That funness comes through.
We're making it a word.
They know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the book. And that's what I was talking about. The joy in the book, the laughter in the book.
Yeah.
So if you had like one thing that you would hope that somebody would be able to pull from this book, what would it be?
One thing.
Yeah, or maybe there's two or three things you'd like them to pull from the book. But like when you were sitting down writing this book, you're passionate about the book, you live it. And I truly believe that when you've shared it, it's to help others.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, and I'm working with a gal right now, actually, who is reading the book, and she's keeping up with like detailed notes on what she's learning and what's going on. And it was the perspective that, you know, you can change your mindset by just a shift in perspective and how you're choosing to see the way you're living your life. And that, and understanding that it's not your fault. You know, it's not your fault you fell victim to identity sabotage. But once we know it, it's our responsibility to do something about it. And so giving them solutions, letting them know that they're not alone, that they are made for more, and that they are perfectly perfect just the way they are, and being able to see that. And again, no, they're not alone. That, you know, been there too. I see you. I hear you. I am you. Oh my gosh. Yes. You know,
yeah.
Like, absolutely. Yeah. And that there is a solution, and it doesn't have to hurt to dive deep and go in and pull out the root. So,
yeah. Now, are we going to be expecting some more books from you in the future?
Yes, I actually am. I finished and published. It's the Emotional Fitness Journal, as you're going through in the beginning for your finding your baseline. I created Emotional Fitness Journal based off of the emotional diet that I talked a little bit about in the beginning of the book. So I just finished that. That's on Amazon, and you can pretty much find it anywhere else too online, Emotional Fitness Journal. And then the next book, the sequel to It's Not About the Banana, is going to be Eat the Banana or Die. And
trademarked, folks.
Right. Eat the banana or die. And, you know, because that really goes into a little deeper dive of the fifth step and healing, and how do we let go, reveal, and grieve through some of these unsafe beliefs that were so much we thought were our truth. It was a part of our identity that we're going to let go of. So it's
The letting go phase.
The letting go phase.
Yeah.
To make room for you. Yes. The real you to shine through.
Letting go of that identity that's no longer serving you. It can feel a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit uncomfortable when you're not living the same way.
Right.
Okay, yeah. So I think we're coming into the close of the show. So if people want to get a hold of you, can you please give your website one more time for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's www.soulshacksisters.com. And that's soul, S-O-U-L, shacksisters.com.
And what about your handles for like Instagram and TikTok?
Oh, I love
TikTok
it. Yeah.
Ones, but repeat it as many times as you'd like.
Of course, of course. Do all my shout outs. I love this. So TikTok handle is Yogi, Y-O-G-I, Tanya, T-O-N-Y-A. So Yogi Tanya is my TikTok handle. The Instagram handle is Soul Shack Sisters. The Twitter is my name with an underscore in between it. So Tanya underscore Delaine, and Delaine, D-E-L-A-I-N-E. And Facebook is the handle. After that is the Soul Shack Sisters. I mean, pretty much if you go on the Google and you type in Soul Shack Sisters and Tanya Delaine, they'll be able to hopefully find all of those platforms. And they're all linked on my website. Every single, my YouTube channel, my podcast, my you name it, it's all on there.
Nice. Well, it's been an absolute honor talking with you today. I am super excited about the book.
Yes,
if anyone is looking to buy the book, I really recommend you do it, especially if you're someone who is struggling, if you're somebody who has gone dark and you're wondering, is there a way out and how can I relate to somebody? This is a great book to read for that reason. You can always also feel free if you are someone suffering from addiction and alcoholism, because this book is in the self-help area for addiction.
Yeah.
Always know that there are recovery groups out there that can help you. You can always reach out to AA.org. I don't even know if I'm supposed to say that right now, but you can do that. There's a lot of resources out there. You can always reach out to me also. If anyone's wanting to reach me for either coaching or any of the above, it's SusanDenee.com. And mine is D-E-N-E-E. SusanDenee.com. And you can also go to my Facebook at Susan Denee, Know You're Crazy. You have to do Susan Denee, Know You're Crazy, or the YouTube channel for any of the shows that have been recorded and already posted. All right. Well, that's a wrap. This hour flew by. Thank
flew
you.
Flew by.
Coming.
It was bananas.
It was bananas. So remember,
bananas.
There's the book. It's not about the banana. All right, Tanya. Well, thank you for your time. Everyone have a blessed evening.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You have been listening to Know You're Crazy.
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 And my name is Susan Denee. We are identifying, understanding, and treating your crazy one episode at a time. Tune in to TransformationTalkRadio.com.
To connect with me or Grow Spurt Your Life, please visit SusanDenae.com. That's SusanDenae, DENEE.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.